passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
When Alliance, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and waiting. The A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night. Download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade Take the Mic.
Yes, it is us, John Pollock and Wei Ting, here with you on Monday night, March the 18th. Hello, Wei.
Hey, John. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Really?
Yes. Doing great. Okay. Wonderful.
Cool. I buy it. I do buy it.
Okay. Did you notice the snow that we got today?
A little bit. Yeah.
Man, what's going on? March.
I don't know. I guess we've had a really wild, mild winter. Maybe it's about to be wild, but I just know that at some point we are going to end up paying for it. So, you know, maybe we'll be in May talking about shoveling at some point.
Could be coming our way. Well, welcome everybody to the program. We have got Raw to talk about from Raleigh, North Carolina, some news items to get into, lots of great stuff. And we'll be hearing from our good friends at NordVPN on top of that. But headline news, okay, across the news ticker, okay? Where is everyone going to be Wednesday night? Well, if you're in Toronto, you might be going to Dynamite. You might be sticking around for Rampage. But where you're really going to be going is to the main event that evening, because the pro wrestling at the Coca-Cola Coliseum is merely a appetizer for Brayden and Davey Portman's AEW Dynamite after party. They are probably breaking numerous copyright laws and just completely taking from AEW's intellectual property here for this after party, right down to two individuals that they might show up. They might be, maybe they will be saying I quit, and then they will be going to sing. I don't know if there's any songs about quitting.
Quit playing games with my heart.
Perfect Do idea. It. So this is going to be going down Wednesday night at Sneaky D's at Bathurst and College, 431 College Street, 11 p.m. until close, which when it's Brayden and Davey, close could be any time. So $5 gets you in wrestling-themed drinks, prizes to be won. And if I know Brayden, he will be recording many a video and uploading them afterwards. So you will be immortalized with your wrestling karaoke. So try to make it out for the Poison Rana crew as they present their after party following Dynamite, following Rampage, into the wee hours of Thursday morning.
$5 entry. And you know what? Sneaky D's is not a very big place, especially upstairs where they'll be hosting this. So I would recommend getting these tickets in advance. PoisonRana.ca.
Go check that out. All right. So the latest here that we have regarding Mark Coleman, this is we've been following this over the last week since his house fire. So over the weekend, he got discharged from the hospital, and then he was back home, and then he was having chest pains, and they brought him back to the hospital, and it turns out he had pneumonia. And then on Monday, he popped up at the gym with Matt Brown, and guy is, you know, he's back at the gym. Don't know if he was getting a workout in. I think he would be more than allowed to have a week off, I would think, but appears to be out of the hospital now. Don't know what the status is of his pneumonia, but he's up and around. He's moving. So this is quite the recovery that he has made. Hopefully he is out of the hospital for good now.
Superhuman, I would say. I mean, yeah, like we await to see I feel like the man maybe should still be in bed taking it easy. Like, I certainly, days out of the hospital twice, maybe wouldn't be making my way around anywhere. But, you know, this guy is clearly built differently from the average human being. So, you know, a happy story overall.
Yes. We also want to give our best wishes to Afa Anawahi Sr. He is 81 years old, and he suffered a fall over the weekend, breaking two portions of his back. So he's in the hospital, and he's had a really rough go of things because he himself had pneumonia back in January. And when he was hospitalized then, 2 months ago, suffered two heart attacks while at the hospital. So, I mean, he has been going through a really rough stretch of times and then had this fall over the weekend. So all of our best wishes to Afa Anawahi, who I would think, Wei, if he had been in, you know, fine health, I would have thought, like, they're probably going to have a ton of the family at WrestleMania this year in some form or fashion. Like, I could see them doing a really elaborate entrance for The Rock and Reigns and playing off that family tree of some sort for WrestleMania. And you certainly think of the Samoan family, you think of Afa.
If he's well enough to attend, I mean, that
I doubt it. If we're talking about a guy who has a broken back and he's in the hospital, I would think traveling is probably not wise at this juncture. Although, I mean, he does I can't remember if I think because they had their school in Pennsylvania, which is not the furthest, but I don't know if he was like in between there and Florida where he was actually situated. But regardless, I think attending WrestleMania might not be on his priority.
Something tells me that there will be other opportunities to have that cameo.
The New Japan Cup, they are now down to the final two. We are at the near the end of the tournament, and today's show saw Yota Tsuji overcome the House of Torture led by Evil. So the match began, Wei, and we had all of the House of Torture instantly run in, and they're attacking. Hiromu and Bushi run in, so they just throw out the match in 90 seconds. It's a no contest, but then they're like, well, we've got to restart the match. So they restart the match, and Tsuji is fighting, and then the House of Torture, they wait a respectable amount of time, then they do another set of run-ins, and Hiromu and Bushi are in. Everyone takes punches to the dick. And then Tsuji avoids everything is Evil. I think I counted 85 ref bumps. And then Ren Narita has the weightlifting bar when finally Shingo Takagi decides, you know what? Maybe my LIJ teammates need my help. So finally Takagi appears and fights them off. Bushi hits Evil with the mist. And then it is the gene blast that stops Evil. If ever there was something to stop him, it was the gene blast. Hmm. And Yota Tsuji wins this one in 16 minutes and 50 seconds. I guess this all comes down to your level of tolerance for the House of Torture. But this was the baby face coming out on top at the end that did have the audience at least interested in the end. And then the other semifinal. So David Finlay fell ill over the weekend. So Goto advanced by forfeit. And we had Sonata beating Jack Perry in their rematch from last year's Forbidden Door. So this semifinal was Goto and Sonata. And Goto has dedicated this New Japan Cup to his father, who died last month. So you have that story that has been introduced here going against the former champion. I think most were thinking like Sonata wins this, and this sets up the rematch from Dominion last year where Sonata defeated Yota Tsuji. But it was, in fact, Goto pulling out the victory here. And he ended up winning this after surviving a Shining Wizard, one with the GTR. Very good match. You do have a story here with Goto and taking on Yota Tsuji. So that's Wednesday's final. Goto has previously won three New Japan Cups, and this will be his seventh final. But he's fighting like for his dad. He's going to kind of be the sentimental favorite here. So we'll see what they do on Wednesday with the final. I can't say this New Japan Cup has garnered a ton of buzz attached to it. I mean, there've been some good matches, but nothing I've heard people raving about to match of the year level. And yeah, I mean, do you favor one option over the other? Do you go with like the feel good story of Goto, or do you go with your rising star of utilizing this tournament, because this will set up the match with Naito in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, interesting. I don't think there's really any option but the Rising Star. We are talking about a New Japan that desperately needs that spotlight on your next, you know, Kazuchika Okada, and you know, there's been enough discussion and criticism about maybe, you know, Okada's exit not giving any value to one of the younger guys. I can't imagine you would take a Yota Tsuji all the way to the final and not have him win. And, you know, the circumstances surrounding Goto even being in the final with David Finley's exit probably suggest that he wasn't supposed to be in the spot. And there's a very unfortunate real life circumstance that he's using perhaps for his character's motivation. But I don't think it'll necessarily come to realization, at least as a character. But who's to say you can't dedicate, you know, like your performance in general to a family member who's recently passed? I mean, I hope he has a great match. That's incredible motivation right there.
I think they will have a great match on Wednesday. I like this pairing of the two. It is the real sentimental story with Goto, but New Japan is not, they do not need Goto. Like Goto is not the answer at the moment to set up this title challenger for the show coming up April 6th. So there you have the latest on the New Japan front. Triple A announced their lineup for their first of three Triple Mania cards. The first is coming up April 27th, and it's going to be a six-match show headlined by Nick Nemeth against Alberto El Patron for the vacant Mega Championship that Vikingo was stripped of when he suffered an injury, and he has held that title for over 3 years. So they are presenting to you 2013 WWE.
Yeah,
the Money in the Bank cash in for this vacant Mega Championship. So that is the main event.
Will AJ Lee be in Dolph's corner with Biggie Langston?
Biggie Langston will not. No, probably not. I don't know how much you can recreate. I mean, why don't we just do this in New Jersey instead of Monterey? An option?
Why not?
Are you aware? This is Vampiro's on his retirement tour this year. Which I'm not lying. The last Rewind Away we did, there was a news item that Vampiro was retiring then. He has had many retirements. So this is the latest. This is his part of his retirement tour. So he will be teaming with Macias and Pagano against Cibernético, Dark Oz, and Dark Cuervo on the show. And the whole lineup you can go read at postwrestling.com. They haven't announced the US outlet yet. I would assume this ends up on Triller TV as they have in the past, but that is not confirmed yet. So April 27th. They have follow-up Triple Manias in June and August this year. And then we head on over just to some ratings notes. SmackDown on Friday was in line with what they've been doing, 2,340,000 viewers and a 0.68, down 4% in viewers and down 1% in the demo. But you did have the flip this time of The Rock not closing the show, but opening the show. We haven't seen the quarters yet, but nonetheless, in line with the previous week where you had the show building to The Rock segment. And I think they're going to, like, there is no Rock this Friday on SmackDown, but they are building up this big face-to-face with Cody and Roman. And if there's one thing WWE fans are down with at the moment, it's guys talking about when they're going to fight one another, and they can't get enough.
Usually, I mean, just simply having a Roman Reigns appearance would be cause enough for a spike. You know, they are giving you a face-to-face between Cody and Roman. I think this show, well, it probably won't do maybe Rock numbers, but I think it'll still do incredibly well. Man, maybe it'll do Rock numbers. Maybe it'll surprise me.
And then Rampage did 327,000 viewers and a 0.11 in the demo. So they were down 10% and 11% respectively. 29% drop among women in the demo, while 18 to 34 was even. This was for the show that had Roderick Strong, Mike Bennett, and Matt Taven against Top Flight and Action Andretti in the main event. Maybe the main event of the show was the reveal of the brackets.
Well, let's not forget Konosuke Takeshita versus Commander.
Did you see this match?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, this was fantastic. I mean, it was that springboard into the Canadian Destroyer when I saw this. It was just an incredible match that these two had. Mm-hmm. And Commander was originally going to take on Pac on Saturday and then was hurt, and they ended up not being able to do that match. So Pac took on Aaron Solo on Saturday. But I thought Collision, I mean, in particular, the big Danielson Shibata match, I thought that was tremendous as well. I mean, you got pretty much almost 20 minutes of Danielson and Shibata opening up the show. And this, I would argue this was maybe as good a match as Shibata has had in this comeback.
Yeah, yeah. And now, could you argue the same for Bryan Danielson?
Oh, since when?
Like since this AEW run.
Oh, the AEW run. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would put this at the level of maybe like the MJF 60-minute match comes to mind. Danielson has a much longer list of matches in AEW. I have to certainly go through them. I wouldn't put this at the top, but I was thoroughly enjoying this entire match. They could have gone the first hour of Collision. I would have been happy.
For a free television match, maybe just even throw out the sort of context of this match actually even taking place, I thought it was fantastic. Pay-per-view quality.
When they were doing those slaps to the collarbone
the
area.
Yeah.
And then when Danielson is being interviewed in the back and you just look and it looks like the man's taking a blowtorch to his body. I mean, he does have that quality he's going to leave a mark.
Yes. I guess a great trait to have when you're a pro wrestler. I wonder what color it is today.
Yeah, I don't think he's a big guy on Instagram, but he does have a body that is tailor-made for it in professional wrestling. Tuesday night, NXT, they have announced a ton of matches. So we have qualifiers for the for this tag to determine who will be the challengers for Breaker and Corbin at Stand and Deliver. So Hank and Tank will take on Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson. Two members of the No Quarter Catch crew will take on Axiom and Nathan Frazier. Riley Osborne will challenge for the Heritage Cup against the chosen member of the No Quarter Catch crew. Roxanne Perez takes on Tatum Paxley. Sol Ruka against Brinley Reese. Lola Vice against Carmen Petrovich. And Trick Williams takes on Noam Dar. The names never jump out at me until I have to read them all in succession together. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are a very unique name generator that gives us Brinley Reese and Carmen Petrovich.
Yeah. No, I could have sworn you made at least one of those up, and you could probably sneak one in at this point. And
one of those weeks, I'll just throw in a match and yeah. See which one is the non NXT names. But that is happening on Tuesday night. And then for Wednesday, they are almost at 6,000 tickets out. So they should hit six by Wednesday night at the Coca-Cola Coliseum. But we have Christian and Adam Copeland, I Quit, for the TNT title, Eddie Kingston and Kazuchika Okada for the Continental title, just the one. Hook against Chris Jericho, that is non-title. Tony Storm and Mariah May against Deonna Purrazzo and Thunder Rosa. And we will hear from Mercedes Moné. Mm-hmm.
Which, at this point, we know she will be there live in person.
Maybe she'll be there live, but they're going to dim the lights and she'll just speak on the loudspeaker.
Oh, interesting. Yes. Maybe you'll hear her from karaoke. Maybe that's where she'll be headed afterwards.
Okay. The whole place will start chanting CEO, led by Braden.
I'm sure they would put that into the system if she was going to make an appearance.
And then Rampage will immediately follow Dynamite, and they've announced two matches for that portion. I could very well see them starting the main event, the I Quit match, and it bleeds into Rampage. I mean, that to me would, let that go till like 10 after or something.
See, I don't know if they've ever. Well, I mean, there is an overrun these days, right? Isn't there for Dynamite?
There's almost always the overrun, yes.
So I guess you have that, yeah.
Which you just extend the match, and I mean, that's your first quarter of Rampage, and then you do these two matches to fill out the hour. It's Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale against Julia Hart and Sky Blue in a street fight, and something tells me they're going to do something very violent in this one. And then our other wild card match in the tag tournament has Powerhouse Hobbs and Kyle Fletcher against Trent Beretta and Orange Cassidy. Mm-hmm. Yep. Three hours.
We're used to it. That's easy, right?
And then no Collision on Saturday, so you get a Saturday off of AEW programming.
I'm curious to know if there'll be anything else beyond these 3 hours. Do they tape any ROH matches?
They were taping ROH in Ottawa on Saturday. I don't know if they'll be taping more ROH, but I would think that would be beforehand. So you'll get plenty of wrestling on Wednesday. That is the promise at the Coca-Cola Coliseum. And you know what? If you are somebody that suddenly Saturday night, wait a minute, I have no Collision to watch. Maybe I should just go on over to Singapore and see what they've got going on. How could I watch what's going on in Singapore? Well, we've got the answer for you for your Saturday night viewing pleasure.
It is 2024, and tracking technology from advertisers, ISPs, and hackers is getting more sophisticated than many of us can understand. Something you can do to give yourself a bit more peace of mind this year is to protect your browsing by investing in a trusted VPN like NordVPN. Voted best VPN for privacy of 2023 by security.org, Nord is one of the most established and reputable VPN providers in the field. NordVPN is also something I use every day to access geo-blocked online streaming services like AEW+. By far the best way of watching AEW programming commercial-free with on-demand access to AEW's entire TV archive. But perhaps the most value I've gained from using Nord has been the ability to unlock cheaper prices to online content from other parts of the world. And from now until March 20th, when you sign up at nordvpn.com/postwrestling, receive 4 bonus months at discount pricing on all 2-year plans. Plus, users in the US, Canada, UK, and Australia receive an Uber Eats voucher valued from $10 to $30 with their standard, plus, complete, or ultimate plan. Again, that's nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Sign up for as low as $2.91 a month and enjoy some free Uber Eats, along with all the benefits of a premium VPN like Nord's.
So jump on it. March 20th is in 2 days. You want that Uber Eats voucher?
Who wouldn't? While you're watching whatever you're watching from Singapore.
How much has this ad campaign infuriated you with my, just me in general?
Well, no, I mean, it really has. It's not at all. I think, in fact, that was probably the best one. But it also happens to be the end of this particular portion of the campaign. So while we're very well oiled at this point, but
what a run we've had.
A good practice for the next one.
Well, final note before we get to Raw is our schedule coming up this week. So it's a little bit changed up a little, because Rewind Away is going to be coming at you on Tuesday this week, because we are going to be delaying Rewind to Dynamite by a day. So if you tune in Tuesday, postwrestlingcafe.com, we are going to be reviewing Shimmer Volume 68 from October of 2014 at the legendary Berwyn Eagles Club in Berwyn, Illinois, headlined by cheerleader Melissa, defending her Shimmer Championship in a 4-way elimination match with Madison Eagles, Nicole Matthews, and Athena. And if you look at the front cover of this DVD, was there a fireball in the main event of the Shimmer 4-way elimination match? Tune in on Tuesday to find out. But lots of Shimmer talent on this card, including a match between Mia Yim and the current Dakota Kai, then known as Evie. And we've got really Asuka. Like a who's who of female talent during this time period. Yes, Asuka under her Kana name. This is about a year before she goes to WWE. Cherry Bomb, who would later become Ally and the Bunny. Lots of matches on this one. Wait, how deep into the card are you so far?
I'm halfway through, so I got about half left before okay. We record tomorrow.
Okay, well, that's coming up on Tuesday.
Respectable that? Amount to your liking?
That's. I was expecting you to tell me you were starting tonight after Raw.
That would be a challenge, yeah.
So that's coming up Tuesday. As well, up next, we'll be live on Tuesday night after that show. Wednesday, we will not be doing Rewind to Dynamite. Since we will be at the show in Toronto, we are going to go live Thursday at noon Eastern here on the Post YouTube channel. So you can catch that as well. For Cafe members on Thursday, Karen and Bruce will have a review of the New Japan Cup final dropping Thursday. And of course, Brandon and I will be up usual time Wednesday at 3 Eastern this week.
Also, starting this week, WH Park and Rich Fan are back for MCU Later. They will be talking about the new X-Men 97 cartoon series over at Disney Plus. So this edition will be free. So if you want to jump on board, listen. The show, I think, comes out this Thursday. So watch both episodes, listen to Park and Fan, as well as any other MCU news I'm sure that we'll touch on weekly.
WH Park, the undefeated life of the party.
Yes, I would agree. By the way, thank you, John, for hosting on Saturday. I had a great time.
Oh, I left you an invoice, so we're all good.
Well,
no, we had a great time. Got to see you. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Had a lot of people come over. We had a good time, yeah. I thought.
I had an awesome time. How were you feeling the next day?
Oh, I was fine.
That's good.
I didn't really have much. I had like my 2 birthday shots and that was...
That's it?
Really? And I had... you brought those little like Asahi beer cans. So I had like 2 of those and that was about it. I didn't... Wow. I did a lot of talking.
You know, often that could be enough to drain me, because like I was pretty beat up the next day.
Well, as was our good pal Mike's car. He had to, his car got tampered with, and then I had to help him boost his car the next day, but did get it back and alive. So this is definitely a private discussion that no one cares about, but still just oversharing. Let us now go to the PNC Arena in Raleigh, North Carolina. Last update from WrestleTix was over 12,500 tickets out, which was pretty much at their capacity level. Michael Cole did call this their ninth consecutive TV sellout on the broadcast, with the number given on television of 14,370. So it sounds like the streak continues and should continue on Friday, because Milwaukee is almost sold out as well. And I think Chicago will probably follow that as well. I think this streak will at least take us into Mania.
Then you got The Rock coming up on one of these.
The Rock's going to do Brooklyn in 2 weeks' time for the Go Home Raw. And we got the arrivals. And the only reason I bring this up is because we got a quick glimpse of Johnny Gargano's 1997 WWF Warzone red and black jacket that he was wearing.
Mm. Okay, I didn't even notice, but impressive.
He's the one guy that splurged on this jacket. Jey Uso comes out, and Michael Cole is comparing this match at WrestleMania to past brother versus brother affairs with Bret Owen and Matt and Jeff. I don't know if the Matt Jeff match gets the same remembrance as Bret Owen does in WrestleMania past. I can't say that the Matt Jeff program really gelled.
Oh, it depends on maybe what age you are, what type of fan you are.
Well, apparently, Pat McAfee nearly blew out his knee doing the Yeet entrance, and they felt the need to replay this later in the night and focusing on Pat's knee. Imagine this guy tore his ACL doing this, and that would be like catastrophic to his broadcast career.
I feel like they should get rid of the swivel chairs. Do you really need to swivel that badly?
These things should be nailed into the ground. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Like,
keep these chairs stationary. And
how about a nice standing desk? Adjustable standing desk.
I've considered it. I've considered everything. Yeah, I need a new chair badly. That's my
well, next. For Pat McAfee specifically. But
okay, well, maybe we could trade. I'll give him this and give me their office chair. Jay says that the Bloodline is in the building and asks, where's Jimmy? And Jimmy and Solo Sikoa show up through the crowd. So they got some last minute tickets here. And Jay confesses that I miss you. And says, despite all the bad blood, I don't see you. I don't ride with you anymore. Come back. Jimmy says, I never left. And he explains how I helped you leave the Bloodline. And look what happened. You became a top star on Raw. You're a merchandise seller. And you won the tag titles without me. You forgot about me. Jimmy says, the biggest moment of your career is because of me. And the biggest moment will be at WrestleMania. Jay says, that will be my biggest moment, when I knock the Yeet out your ass. And with that, Jay attacks Jimmy, goes after Solo on the apron, but turns around, eats the super kick from Jimmy, and then Cody runs down and hits this incredible-looking Cody cutter that he nails onto Solo Sikoa to save Jay.
Huge reaction for the Cody entrance, obviously. I thought this was the best Jay has sounded, you know, since breaking off on his own. He didn't even rely on the Yeet call and response in his promo here. I thought he just sounded like a really good, sort of genuine sounding, you know, emotional babyface here from a guy who just simply misses his own brother. And I thought Jimmy sounded really good too.
I thought this is the best thing Jimmy's been involved with since like WrestleMania last year. I mean, this guy has like done nothing, and it's been very flat for a long time. And this was...
Not only that, like, they never really gave us a satisfying answer as to what happened with the breakup and why he actually helped Jimmy why he helped Jay.
It made no sense
until now, you know. And to be honest, I had kind of moved on. I had kind of forgotten that he even helped Jay initially before joining back with the Bloodline. But I guess I'm glad that they decided to tie up that loose end here. So now let's see if it makes sense. Okay, so He
cost him the title against Roman at SummerSlam to help him become a big star by not winning the title. And then Jay quit and got recruited to Raw by Cody. And this was all Jimmy's master plan. He knew that by screwing him in SummerSlam, Jay would quit wrestling. And then Cody would lure him to Raw. He knew all this would happen. Right?
I don't know.
Dude, don't try, because it was not well done.
But the story somehow has evolved into, I helped you with your exit strategy and you didn't bring
me along.
Should
he be saying that out loud on television for Roman to hear? Like, hey, I was working covertly to help you escape the mafia.
Yeah.
While the big Don is watching.
It's far from an airtight story, I'll say. But
let's just not reference it. We had a falling out.
Yeah. But I would say, like, as far as making this feel serious, and especially making Jimmy Uso feel like a serious character again after spending, you know, the better part of a year being the jester of the bloodline, I mean, he's had a pretty good turnaround, you know, even though he's really kind of battling from, I would say, a pretty big deficit compared to, you know, the level that Jay has really ascended to over the past year. So, but this is a good feud in good shape right now, especially with this segment.
And a well-placed sign as well.
Perfectly placed, yeah.
Adam Pearce is on the phone, presumably with Nick Aldis, pissed about Jimmy and Sokoa showing up. So then Heyman appears, apologizing, saying that attack was not authorized by The Rock or Roman Reigns. Jimmy and Sokoa went into business for themselves. And Heyman explained his flight was delayed. So Jimmy and Sokoa are out of the building. They're gone. You have Roman's word. But I have business to handle. And then I will, too, be gone. But when I do my business, everyone will be caught off guard. And boy, would we be caught off guard by this announcement, this stunning announcement by Paul Heyman.
That didn't really come to fruition at all.
Caught me off guard, totally. Yeah. Show up alone. Ciampa and Gargano against the Creed brothers in the qualifier. I thought this was the match of the show. And by the end of these qualifiers, I was very disappointed that the Creeds are somehow the odd team out here. Because some of the teams that are in this ladder match, I understand why they're in. But man, this team is something to watch. They're just, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, it's not always going to be smooth, but it's going to be entertaining and it's going to be nuts. Like, these guys just are like raw athletes that are still being sculpted into fine professional wrestlers. And they're very rough around the edges, but it's really entertaining to watch.
They go for it and they can lift people really easily, and therefore they're just very exciting to watch. I don't think we have to be that disappointed in them not being on the show. They're still very young in their careers, and I think there's probably going to be plenty of opportunity for them to be on future WrestleManias. So this is probably a good, you know, at least runner-up spot for them.
Well, you know what this is? This is year one for DIY, mm-hmm. or sorry, for the Creeds, because the new story is Michael Cole alerting us that the Creeds have had DIY's number and DIY have never had a match before at WrestleMania. So that's our story, that they have never wrestled at WrestleMania. So will this be the year for DIY? So they are getting into it. After the commercial break, Julius does his deadlift vertical on Ciampa from his knees. Always impressive here. Don't know how many years he should continue to have this part of his repertoire, but it is impressive to watch. And then the Creeds deliver double standing moonsaults, and Gargano saves Ciampa from a Brutus ball. Brutus pounces Ciampa over the desk, and then Brutus just starts posing with Pat McAfee for the camera, and we go to our second commercial break. Then Ciampa hits an air raid crash to Julius off the buckle. They're trading strikes, and Julius gets the ankle lock applied. Gargano runs at him, so Julius, while he's got the ankle lock applied, lifts him, gives him a one-arm power bomb, and goes back to the ankle lock. Brutus applies another ankle lock, so we have double submissions, which we then get a double reversal into what look to be mirror images of one another, but are different. We had the Gargano escape and the Sicilian stretch showcased for us.
He's kind of transitioned from doing the Sicilian stretch to like a more traditional, like, crippler crossface type of move, even though Cole just, I think half the time he's not really even watching what the move actually is. He's just kind of calling.
I'm sure it's not going to be renamed the Crippler Crossface. I think that's a safe assumption.
Sure. Yeah.
Both Creeds get to their feet. They power out of the submissions and they throw, as Michael Cole calls them, and not the first time he's called them this, DIY.
Give the man a break.
Give yourself it. And they run into each other. We get moonsaults by both Creeds for a two count. And then we get one of my favorite finishes from back in the day. This was the Steiners and Head Shrinkers with the attempt at the Doomsday, which is countered with a victory roll by Ciampa to avoid the Doomsday. and ends up with a series of roll-up counters and Gargano super kicks Julius as Ciampa gets the roll-up and wins in 18 minutes and 36 seconds. And then, boy, I did not know this stat about DIY, but Michael Cole yells, for the first time in 10 years, DIY are going to WrestleMania. And I'm doing this in my head. I'm like, I know the Cruiserweight Classic was in 2016. So at minimum, we're shaving off like minimum 2 years. But hey, it's a nice round number, isn't it?
Okay, that's what you meant. Right. I guess they've only been, I mean, are we missing something?
How many years have they been eligible to be at WrestleMania, given like we're talking right. about years in NXT?
When did they join the system? Was it 2016?
2016 was when they were in the Cruiserweight Classics together.
Okay. Yeah. Mm. Well, they were in NXT slightly before that.
Okay. Well.
But not 2 years before that.
It's a 10-year journey. Why don't we just say 20? 20 years to get here.
But you are probably an announcer's worst nightmare, John.
I've got this weird thing with like just facts. It's truth. Like it's crazy.
Yeah, reality. I thought this was an excellent match here. You know, we haven't seen the Creeds in a while, but it's clear that they've only been getting better in the meantime. And this match really felt like it was a showcase, you know, meant to I guess to show us what level they're currently at. Early on, they gave everything to the Creeds here, you know, and they just displayed some incredible athleticism, a lot of creativity in their double team spots. By the end, I thought they built like successfully hype for the Creeds while still giving Ciampa and Gargano this pretty clean win. So excellent match. Crowd was way more into this than I think they should have been, given how little airtime we've actually gotten from the Creeds. And I mean, DIY are accessories to this R-Truth thing, you know, so not really much there either, but the crowd loved this match.
The Creeds were their sacrifice.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Judgment Day are in the back hanging out with Andrade, and they explain how they run things here on Raw. And we don't just invite anyone, but if you impress us, we'll take notice. Andrade's like, cool, I've got a match next week. Okay, we'll be watching. And Andrade turns into Damian Priest, exits, and then Priest brings up DIY's win and that JD should have won the gauntlet last week. And JD defends himself, saying Ricochet got lucky and reascends Dominic to make things right with Ricochet. You know, Andrade's been back for quite some time now. I don't exactly know what this man's purpose is on a week-to-week basis, but he is just kind of just getting long time to get acclimated.
I think he's kind of one of those guys who's kind of caught in between that awkward period where you know, the Rumble is a perfect time to reintroduce somebody, but it's also the run-up to WrestleMania, and not everybody is going to be able to come in and just get a storyline when, you know, you already have so many things going on. So clearly they're setting something up for Andrade post-Mania, but maybe even there'll be something that'll, you know, make sense for him to be involved with even at WrestleMania, but in a more smaller role. But a lot, they're teasing a lot here. You know, they teased Andrade versus Damian Priest down the line. Maybe even this match, you know, with Finn Balor and Andrade, or maybe he actually becomes a part of Judgment Day first.
I'm looking forward to the remake of Can't Hardly Wait starring Finn Balor.
You know, he really is rocking his early 2000s Kangle pretty well.
Then we had Katana Chance and Caden Carter against Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. They replayed Candice LeRae's verbal attack on Maxine from last week. And I guess we're to believe that like Indy Hartwell is at least semi-aware of this now. I mean, it has aired on television and thus Indy is still teaming with her, but seems torn.
She's fully aware of what's going on. I mean, it's not like last week Candice was doing all of this behind Indy's back, but Indy is conflicted.
She kind of was doing it behind her back. Remember, she had the confused look on her face.
Okay.
It was left ambiguous if she actually...
But she's not trying to hide it. Candice isn't trying to hide this. Like,
no.
The whole reason she's doing this is because they've been losing. And they realize that they need a new edge. And Indy has been reluctant to jump on.
If I was Indy, I'd be saying, you know what? She might have a point.
I think that might be the end result of all this.
Well, Katana Chance flips onto her feet and hurts her knee, and she goes down, so Indy backs off. So LeRae tags herself in, and she attacks her and nails the knee, torques on it, and gets the submission in 2 minutes and 3 seconds, and Indy just looks shocked here as Candice is laughing and making fun of Katana Chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't think they really had much time to, you know, deliver a satisfying match, but I don't think this was really what it was about either. You know, they are here to tell a story, and I thought this was a clever way of continuing this sort of remorseless Candice LeRae heel character and continuing to place Indy in the sort of predicament of morality that she has to navigate. So they definitely dialed it back from last week, where, like, we didn't have Candice verbally berating somebody and by bringing up a dead relative. And I think for a lot of the criticism I saw about the ankle last week, this is probably better. But I think overall they're successful.
They did replay the line, though. Like, they could have omitted
but that. It's not her gimmick. It's not her gimmick the way it's Christian Cage's gimmick.
Right.
She didn't stop the match to verbally berate her opponent this week like she did last week, which probably was a bit too hokey. But I think they're successfully making Candice and Indy more interesting and a bit more definable. And I've been very happy to see that.
And then they aired a longer trailer than the one we saw today. This is for the Bray Wyatt documentary that's going to premiere on Peacock on April 1st. And this one, there was a voiceover by Taylor Rotunda, and you saw various clips of different performers and with his widow, JoJo, Mike Rotunda in this as well. And this is going to be narrated by Mark Calloway as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm very excited for it. I also know it's going to be a really, really difficult watch, especially, you know, seeing Bo Dallas speak, seeing JoJo and seeing Mike Rotunda, the people closest to him, speak about this. But I also look forward to, like, this sort of investigation into the creative mind behind, like, one of the most creative people that I think this company has ever employed. So, yeah, this is a – do you think this lends or any higher likelihood that he might be announced for a Hall of Fame, or do you think this would be as much as we'd get with Bray?
I mean, it's going to premiere on the last Monday before Raw. I could really see them announcing Bray on the final Raw before the Hall of Fame, that he's the final entrant. Like, they still have to announce Liam Iavia, and they could do that this week or next. And I would say they've been doing all of these, like, the online Rock announcements. Probably. I would do Bray.
The Rock would probably announce that one, don't you think? His mom or his
he could yeah, it's possible, or they could just release it,
or maybe Cody can announce it if we're, you know, talking about each other's
and he brings family up the grandmother. Okay, yeah, that's another alternative. So yeah, I could very well see this tying in with him being the announcement that final week as the last entrant into the class. Cody comes out for promo time, and you know, they were doing a lot of interesting production stuff on this show. And, you know, so, you know, not just like action wise where, you know, they're utilizing the ramp a lot for kind of zoom ins. And this one, when the segment came back from commercial, they did this overhead shot of Cody. It just seems like they're getting more and more experimental with their production, and it's noticeable.
Definitely. Yeah. Especially with the long tracking shot after Sami Zayn, which we'll talk about.
Yeah. So Cody, they also had all these fan signs out there, all these yellow signs, these "We Want Cody" signs that were distributed. And he calls Roman Reigns the greatest champion in all of sports and said that there are some complications along the way, such as The Rock, and that Dwayne referred to himself as our favorite heel. And Cody let us in on the secret of what this means. And he mentioned people who he thinks of as heels, like Bobby Heenan and Superstar Graham and Ric Flair and Michael Hayes. But he doesn't think that Rock is a heel. I think you're an asshole. And this was censored. And this will just throw everybody all this language being utilized. And said, yes, I cried last week, but Rock, you've been crying backstage this whole time and going to the board of directors and saw this whole situation as great PR for you. But the board of directors are a bunch of yes people and enablers, which definitely, I mean, over this last period, I mean, you
case to be made there. Yeah,
I mean, certainly has further definitions you could attribute. Mm-hmm. He says, Cody is not one of those. Rock, you're a terrible salesman, a carny succubus, and a whiny bitch. And you need this locker room a whole lot more than this locker room needs you. And look at this house. We're doing just fine without you. And you want to talk about my mother? let's talk about your mother. And you thought Cody was just going to go to town on,
I know your mom.
Yeah. And then this guy just eviscerated her, saying she's a wonderful lady who once helped me chop Kevin Owens at a house show. And my mom would never be afraid of you, Rock. And says, when it comes to the tag match on night one, I don't know if I'll win. And I don't know if I'll finish my story. But Rock, how can you be so sure that you will? You haven't been in the ring in years. And on April 6th, the bell's going to ring. And are you going to be the hero that shows up that I saw growing up? Is it going to be Big Dwayne energy? Or are you going to come down with LDS, Little Dick Syndrome? And then he credits Brian Goertz for coming up with the name The Final Boss and says that Roman, you're just his side chick.
Yes.
This is going to be one where...
Well, didn't he call The Rock Roman side chick? Or sorry, he didn't...
No. You're right. He called... Yeah. He said, yes, you are not the final boss. You're just Roman side chick. That's what he called.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so this was definitely the most like fourth wall breaking promo I feel like we've had from Cody since his AEW days.
This was very much a Cody AEW promo.
In this promo, he made direct accusations of The Rock forcing his way to the board of directors to insert himself into WrestleMania. So I guess that is now part of the storyline. It wasn't just The Rock deciding to meet with Cody to convince him that him being in the main event was the better idea. It was The Rock forcibly trying to force himself, using his core executive power to put himself in the main event. There was a reference to Brian Goertz being a ghostwriter essentially for The Rock's promos. And I think that might split some people, but I think given how deep we are into this feud and how much The Rock has made those references about him being a TKO board member himself is now part of storyline.
This has kind of been the story about he is using his power. And I really didn't have the issue of like the
heel wall definition. I had no issue either. I thought it was a perfectly effective way to get into the territory that The Rock has already been sort of like, wading this deep into the feud. I think Cody needed something a little, again, edgier, for attached to his promo to avoid like drowning from The Rock's very babyface promo on Friday. Dwayne is the type of heel that is in many ways a babyface, and he could completely overshadow and kill a babyface, even as strong as Cody, that easily. So I thought it was appropriate for Cody to get into this territory.
I don't think heel or babyface ever has to utter the word succubus in a promo.
So now the better question is, what do you think was a better nickname? Diarrhea Dwayne or LDS?
Oh God, they're all awful.
I felt like LDS was maybe...
I cringed when I heard that, but listen, this crowd loved this promo, and I'm sure this segment's going to do awesome, and this, like, they're riding high that I think there's a ton of latitude of where you can go here, but I recap this, I thought it was very cringy, but a lot of Rock stuff is very cringy. It doesn't matter what one person thinks about it, it's what the larger audience feels about it, and they love this promo, and they're loving all the... Dude, we had a crowd chanting diarrhea Dwayne.
So that's like, it. I felt like LDS was maybe a more an attempt at a more refined version of like diarrhea Dwayne, but something tells me that like diarrhea Dwayne is going to resonate more with these crowds, and it's going to be a bit more chantable for these crowds than LDS is.
And
going
LDS
to be.
Oh god,
yeah. So we'll see. Yeah, I thought Cody gave us some great lines. I don't think you're a heel, I think you're just an asshole.
Isn't that what a heel is?
He said a bad guy. He defined it for us.
Okay.
You could be a bad guy in sports.
Will we get a carny succubus chant?
That's a little less likely. Depends on what crowd. Maybe during the collective, you'll hear that. I enjoyed Cody's promo last week more, but I thought this was a necessary sort of change up in style. Like, this is more like a rap battle, like diss track Cody we got tonight.
Is that going to be the final Raw? Are we going to get
rap
beats?
Rap battle.
In Brooklyn. Yeah.
I think that would be great.
So Paul Heyman comes out, and he is here to offer an apology for bringing security a few weeks ago, or the authorities, AJ Kirsch,
including
and company.
You, yeah,
yes. And this was so weird. He was like, "I want to apologize for that. It was dumb." It was almost like, what a stupid angle we came up with. And said, I have a message on behalf of Roman Reigns. Says, I am not trustworthy, but Roman is a man of his word. And says, for the face-to-face this Friday, there will be no other Bloodline members present except for me, and I am of no physical threat to you. And Cody agrees. And Heyman says that if he shows up alone, you have to show up alone. And Cody's like, yeah, okay. And they shook hands on it and didn't see this coming.
Shockwaves.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, they needed you to stick around through the commercial break. He's a promoter. Maybe some would say a carny succubus.
Was he a carny succubus here?
Yeah.
Nia is backstage and just has a quick message that Becky has never beaten her. She's going to break her face again, take her spot at WrestleMania, and finish what she started with Rhea Ripley and become the women's champion. All things that she failed at tonight.
Finish Becky's story.
Cody runs into Jey Uso, tells him not to trust Roman Reigns, thinks the Bloodline will jump them, and he'll be there for him. I was like, I'm good. Ricochet against Dominic Mysterio. Pat McAfee notes, you know, Dominic's the kind of guy, if he had a wedding, he would get booed at his own wedding.
So the wedding is not canon in WWE.
No. He is a single man on screen.
Well, no, he's with Rhea.
I guess so. Sure. Then who was Rhea with on that photo last week?
Yeah, just a friend.
Just
former
a friend.
Colleague.
Just a buddy.
Yeah.
There's a tornado by Ricochet, and then Dominic knocks him to the floor for the commercial. Ricochet lands a spinning wheel kick. Dominic avoids the 450, and Ricochet connects with the super kick, springboards to knock JD off, and then ducks the 619 and wins with the recoil in 720, and JD tries to jump Ricochet, who kicks off of his chest to flip off the top to the floor and escapes the threat of JD McDonough.
Yes. This felt like some attempt to, you know, capitalize on whatever value they managed to build for Ricochet by booking him really strongly in the gauntlet last week. It was an attempt because, like, I don't know if anything with Dominic and JD feels that significant these days anymore.
What's this crew doing at WrestleMania, if anything?
Well, Dominic will probably...
Dominic will be...
accompanying somebody, maybe. Or maybe, like, you know, he'll be involved in a promo segment, which I think will just still attract a lot of attention now. Are they doing an Andre? They must be doing an Andre at some point, right? On SmackDown, at least?
Possible, yeah.
So maybe they won't get on WrestleMania, if you're talking Ricochet.
Sami Zayn meets with Chad Gable and calls it an honor their match last week. Says, I haven't been pushed like that in a long time, and Gable is really down. He's like, what's wrong? It's like, I'm fine. And then finally he brings it out of Gable, who says, you know, Sammy, it just meant more to me. And Sammy says, hey, that's unfair. I've got a family at home too. I've got people I've let down, and you don't get to tell me what matters in my life. And Gable just ends by stating, Sammy, you can't beat Gunther. And he walks away.
Big reaction for that line from the audience. You know, that was like the type of ooh line. And this was definitely, I think, my favorite thing on this edition of Raw was
Chad and Sami Zayn were great on this show. Yeah.
Just in this segment alone, I felt like there was so much potential here because you were initiating a storyline that is perfect for the Sami Zayn underdog character. You know, his entire current arc leading up to WrestleMania has been he's a guy trying to regain his confidence. You know, he's lost several matches and he's building himself back up now against arguably the most difficult challenge in the entire company. So hearing it from a rival who, you know, basically is vocalizing and putting the spotlight on that particular aspect of him, you can tell for the character is a soul crushing type of line to hear. And I think it's such a perfect role for a character like Zayn's to overcome because he is one of the most relatable underdogs that I think you have here. And a guy who's able to so eloquently describe his and make you feel his emotions, especially when it comes to like a struggle on that sort of level. And beyond that, it's a great role for Chad Gable, you know, to have him continue to be attached to a WrestleMania program.
Adam Pearce is in the ring for the contract signing for the IC title match. Zayn's out first.
And even in the walkout, Zayn, I thought, was excellent. You know, Zayn comes out. He's like doing all his motions, playing to the crowd and everything. But like in between lifting his arms up and like, I don't know, yelling at either side of the stage, he gives a look like he doesn't he doesn't believe in any of this stuff that he's doing.
And then he just got like this, this comment from Chad Gable, and it's affecting.
Like Zayn is the type of performer that is so good at everything, even between the promos, between, you know, the in-ring action, like the walkout, you could tell is a part that he's thought a lot about, and he nailed it here.
And then the second best thing on Raw was Adam Pearce introducing Gunther. And I can confirm that Samantha Irvin's job is increasingly secure.
Hard to replicate. Yeah.
Gunther calls this the biggest and most important match ever for the Intercontinental title. And yet this guy here is dressed like all the bums in the audience. And it was great.
Mm-hmm.
Zayn calls him smug, and it's really pissing me off. I respect what you've done, but there's a lot of people that have not believed in me, that didn't believe I would make it to WWE or headline WrestleMania. Well, I ended the Usos' record-setting tag title run. Now I'm going to end yours. Gunther thinks that he should listen to Chad Gable. The people cheer him, but they don't believe in you. I look into your eyes, Sammy, and I know you don't believe it, and you're going to receive the beating of a lifetime. So keep on dreaming and believing, because your dreams will meet reality at WrestleMania. And as Gunther goes to leave, Zayn tells him to wait, and he walks up to him. Look into my eyes again and get a long look, because you're looking at the man that will take you down at WrestleMania. And Zayn storms out of the ring, and the camera follows him as he walks into the back. He walks past Gorilla and all the way into the backstage area, walks past R-Truth and Miz, who are with DIY. It was just this long, continuous shot. And then we went to the next scene of Miz and R-Truth, with the transition of Miz stating, that's the mindset we need to be in this sheer walk in. And we're still on this shot as we follow Miz and R-Truth in reverse as they come out for their entrance. This was like one of the most impressive production feats I have seen in WWE in forever. And I love that they're trying this stuff. And it was a really cool, like long continuous shot that no one tripped.
That I think is the most impressive aspect of it all. Yeah. I mean, they've done, you know, transitional segments in the back where like one segment bleeds into another. It's pretty commonplace right now, but they've never done something going from an in-ring speaking segment to a backstage speaking segment back to an in-ring match all in one continuous take. Now, it's when you know the layout of like, you know, the Gorilla and everything, you almost ask why they haven't done it up until this point, but nonetheless, incredibly difficult, great blocking, great work from the cameraman, the grips, everybody who, you know, helped to devise and create this particular thing. This is the type of thing that I think could be overdone, but I hope to see it continue, like used, you know, sparingly, because I thought it was used to great effect. We should talk about maybe the actual segment itself. I thought...
No, let's just talk about the blocking.
We can. I'd be happy to spend time. But like, I find the Sami Zayn interaction with Gunther really interesting, because like, you know, we saw the scene with Chad Gable, and you know the walkout, you see it on his face right here. You know, he's a character full of self-doubt, yet when you just simply hear his words, it's that sort of traditional Sami Zayn fiery, like full of confidence type of comeback. But the announcers after the segment are asking the question, you know, does Sami Zayn truly believe his words, or is he just trying to convince himself of what he's saying? And I found it pretty interesting, because usually we are, as audiences, we kind of take like babyface promos for face value, especially when they're as spirited as Sami Zayn's. But we are being now encouraged to look beyond just maybe the energy of his words, and we're trying to, you know, we're being challenged to at least like be a bit more introspective in our analysis of like a babyface promo. Does the guy actually believe in it, or is he only, you know, saying it to mask whatever, you know, confidence issues he has? It's getting me really into this story in a way that I didn't expect.
I hope he comes out on that final Raw before and just speaks in French right at the end.
Why?
Before Elimination Chamber.
Oh, yeah, just to boost his confidence. Like,
yeah, I don't think this will land in Brooklyn the same way. No, I thought this was a great segment. I continue to think that Gunther is just like a fantastic personality.
Yeah, so great.
And then we went into a not so great match with Awesome Truth against Indus Sheer, with Truth and Miz doing their their dual rap together.
Yep.
If that's what we can call it. Cole, that's Indischeer, which of course means Indian Tigers. Yeah, of course, Michael, just something you've never said before in your entire career. But yeah, okay, the Indian Tigers.
Did he miss an appearance at the party that you sent an invite to or something? You really have it in for Michael Cole on this.
Oh, I'm review. Sorry. I don't mean to be singling out. I'm bitter just at times. There's a nerve hold applied by Veer onto Miz as the crowd is chanting along. R-Truth gets the tag, does his Cena spots, and then applies the STF when Sangha makes the save, and they hit a double drop kick to Sangha. And then a skull crushing finale / lie detector combo is hit onto Veer. And then Miz pulls Sangha off balance from the floor, which causes Sangha to bump into Truth with his elbow. And Truth falls on top of the unconscious Veer, who's still out from the skull crushing finale, and flukes their way into a win in 3 minutes and 13 seconds. They're in the match. They're an overact, so you had to get them in somehow. But
they're arguably the most overact, so they definitely needed to be, like, Truth especially needed to have a place at WrestleMania. And I guess if you're trying to book an R-Truth into WrestleMania, you needed some sort of fluky comedic finish, and this was their attempt. It was not the best, but it also wasn't such a long segment that I think it you know, overstayed its welcome either.
Sami Zayn finds Chad Gable backstage and says, "Why don't you think I can beat him?" And Gable explains, "It's not just physical with Gunther, it's mental. Gunther is on a different level and something you've never dealt with before. You win by waiting to find a window of opportunity. There will be no window of opportunity against Gunther, and you need to change your mentality or else you can't win."
I love this. Like, just wonderful logic, you know, in Chad Gable's words. I mean, first of all, it's a continuation of a serious Chad Gable. One of my concerns was after this run up to WrestleMania and him failing, he'd just go back to, you know, thank you and shoosh and being Alpha Academy Chad Gable. He's kept the suit. He's hopefully retired the t-shirt, and he's keeping up this incredibly motivated, serious character that I think could be a bigger star simply by being attached to this. Like, Gable doesn't even have to have a match at WrestleMania, but simply being like what feels almost like a coach now, you know, of sorts, like an Apollo Creed type of, you know, character for Sami Zayn to motivate him to get that confidence up there. I think it's a great role for Gable and really interesting. Like, you look for opportunities. So what's he saying here? You look for heels to make a mistake before you capitalize and win. And he's saying Gunther makes no mistakes.
You need to have the greatest performance of your career, and you can play off of, you only have a few weeks here, but like, you could have Gable in this role of basically breaking down Sami Zayn because you need a better version of you. The version of you, that failed against Roman Reigns is going to fail against Gunther, and you can tie all of that together. Yeah. And you can have multiple things. I do feel this should be the Gunther title loss. Yeah. And I think that Gable should be kind of in this like mentor role, but ultimately one who, like, his designs are on the title, not helping this guy.
Yeah. Prior to this, like tonight, I wasn't so sure that Sami was going to be the one to beat Gable or Gunther, like, because I don't think Sami needed to win. And I think there is enough life in a Gunther, post WrestleMania run as IC champion, but because the storytelling has the potential not to be so good for Sami, I could definitely see him beating Gunther as well.
So really great stuff for the IC title picture. Then we had a update from CM Punk, and people are asking me if I'm going to be at WrestleMania. Well, what are the first four letters of Philadelphia? And if you didn't figure it out, he explained it. They're Phil. Like, thank you. I wasn't going to get there on my own. And they promote his appearance for Chicago next week. But yeah, he'll be at WrestleMania.
Didn't say doing what, but maybe that'll be the announcement on Raw.
You would assume so. Yeah, to set something up. And then Drew is out with Seth Rollins. And man, this did not start off strong for me. We have Rollins that says, you know, in recovery, the first step is admitting the problem. So he gets all choked up and puts his hand over his heart and says, "My name is Seth Rollins and I am a spotlight junkie." like, oh my God. Drew says, you know, Seth, you're becoming a parody. And the punchline is when I beat you for the title at WrestleMania. And I guess he was getting some what chants, because then he's going back to his, you know, every time you chant what, it means that you're happy that I injured CM Punk. And this intensifies the CM Punk chants. And Drew says, well, he's not here. He'd never show up somewhere like Rally. And Rollins just cuts him off and gets serious. He says, this isn't a joke to me. I've been doing this for 20 years. This is how I get my fix. And I want the largest spotlight possible. I'm going to make The Rock and Roman Reigns my bitches on night one. And then on night two, I'm going to have the largest spotlight on you and I for the world championship. So Drew says, you know, I like this passion. I don't want your stupid laugh and your outfits. This is the wrestler's title, the workhorse title. And asked, why can't our hard work be enough for the largest spotlight? And says, Drew isn't going to get the moment he deserves at WrestleMania. I'm getting the moment I've earned. And Seth says, you want the spotlight just as much as me. You're an addict like me. You've been whining for 4 years about deserving more when you won the title in a warehouse. But when all the fans came back and the lights got brighter, you fumbled the ball. And when the lights get bright, that's when I shine the brightest. And Drew, you're going to learn you're not as good as you think you are.
Mm-hmm. Very good segment. I felt
it's turned around. Yeah. I was not looking forward to this beginning where I felt we were just going this
spotlight junkie.
Yeah.
I mean,
then we turned things around.
Yeah. Like there was actual substance, you know, to what ultimately, like what initially was just kind of like a schoolyard type of taunting, you know, line from Drew initially. I think these two have had so much time to say so much to each other at this point that you almost wonder what they could really do, like in what, 3 weeks of this, to like, are they overstaying their welcome with, you know, overexposing how much they have to say to each other on the microphone before it gets stale? But I thought they were successful here in creating captivating dialogue with adding a little bit of intensity and storytelling to the feud here. I think Seth has been on a great, great run on the microphone, you know, these past several weeks. I mean, I have no doubt there was a lot of pressure of working a program with CM Punk heading to this WrestleMania that he had to deliver in every instance on the microphone. Not just that, but like, you know, get to another level. Who would have ever thought that he would now have to face Dwayne The Rock Johnson on the microphone? And I think that's only made him that much better as a promo person. He's tapped into this like really passionate and like authentic voice that sounds very natural and fiery within him right now. And it's somehow worked in accompaniment to like the Sing My Song and like, you know, we haven't really heard as much lately. And I'm glad for that. But it still works as part of his gimmick that he's established up until this point. And I especially love that, like, even in his arguments with Drew McIntyre, he's given us really good logic for the substance behind his words. He was right to call here Drew McIntyre a hypocrite for, you know, Drew is accusing Seth of being a spotlight hog when Drew's entire MO as a character is based around, I didn't win a championship in front of enough people. That's why I'm so pissed off. So what a hypocrite it is for him to, you know, call Seth somebody who wants attention. And Seth is, you know, admitting that he does love attention and it's what keeps him motivated. So I think like really good storytelling here as well.
And then a quick promo from Becky Lynch before the Last Woman Standing match that she is risking it all because she doesn't know any other way. And tonight, I'll be the last woman standing. But before that, it is New Day against Otis and Akira Tozawa in our third qualifier. And man, Pat McAfee saw the greatest spot he has ever seen as an observer of pro wrestling. It was Otis knocking over Xavier Woods using his stomach as a weapon. And he could knock it off this spot that he continually brought up. Tozawa was very good in this, I thought, in particular. He had this run off the buckle and then a tope suicida to both Woods and Kingston on the floor. And then they go through a commercial break. We come back and Kingston's high cross is caught by Otis into a World's Strongest Slam and a caterpillar is connected. Candice LeRae did not cut this off, by the way, and stop Otis from hitting the caterpillar. Otis misses a Vader bomb, and then Woods gets hit by a super Rana by Tozawa off the buckle, and then this incredible senton where he got such height on this. Kingston is in for the save, and then a tornado DDT is hit to Otis on the floor, and a spinning powerbomb by Woods to Tozawa. Woods points to the sign, lands the elbow off the top, and pins Tozawa in 9.5 minutes. But this was a fun match, especially with, I thought, Tozawa getting, you know, 9 minutes, even with a commercial in there. It's longer than Tozawa typically gets to showcase anything.
Gable moving up to a more serious, you know, singles role makes room for Tozawa to really kind of take some of that spotlight, you know, junkie that Tozawa is, of course, you know, to at least, you know, impress in losing efforts week to week. You kind of know the results of all of these tag title qualifiers even before this Raw started, but it's always nice, I guess, to get a little bit of an excuse for a random match on TV.
Becky is warming up, and Liv Morgan walks in and says, "Nia Jax is all yours tonight. Just make sure you kick her ass." And Liv exits.
Yeah, just wanting to keep the Nia Liv program alive, which probably is their direction for WrestleMania, if not post-WrestleMania.
Cody is with Pharaoh, and they run into Seth and pretty much establish that Cody is going alone to Milwaukee on Friday. And this is where they announced The Rock for April 1st in Brooklyn. And next week in Chicago, it's CM Punk appearing and Ricochet against JD McDonough. So at least as of now, Ricochet and JD McDonough can claim that they're going to draw 14,000 people next week.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Last net match of the night. It is the last woman standing match between Becky Lynch and Nia Jax. And they go through the break early, where apparently Becky's book was used as a weapon. Not the copy that she left at the White House. Probably another one. Mm-hmm. And a table is brought out by Becky, and Nia goes to adjust this table and the legs break on the one side.
Several times.
Yes. They were having a lot of trouble with this table. So instead, Nia throws a bunch of chairs inside, and Nia stops a manhandle slam and drops Becky with a Samoan drop on the chairs, slams her on the chairs, and then a leg drop as the referee is counting. But Becky fights from underneath of a chair, attacking with a kendo stick. And then Nia goes for a leg drop, missing on the edge of the apron. And this allows Becky to DDT her on top of the steps. That takes us to our second commercial break. And Becky is placed on the table on the floor, and we have a ladder that is out. So Nia starts climbing this ladder, and Pat McAfee is holding down this ladder. And it was like right in the shot. And it was as though Michael Cole was aware of this and was basically telling Pat to just get back here and get out of the shot. This looks ridiculous. Becky gets off the table in time to use a fire extinguisher, and then is hit with another Samoan drop, this time through a table, and Nia hits the annihilator, and Becky is down on her back. She rolls to the floor, getting to her feet to break the count, and then Becky is elbowing her to avoid another Samoan drop and hits a manhandle slam, putting Nia through a table off the apron. Huge pop for this, but Nia manages to get up at 9. And then in my favorite sequence, Nia is like stumbling around ringside like a mummy. Okay. And she ends up like going into a circle, and she ends up positioning herself onto the desk where Becky is perched on the ladder. And right when she is in target, she lands this leg drop to Nia off the ladder, putting her through the desk. And Becky wins in 18 minutes and 53 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They put a lot into this match. I mean, to maybe live up to the standard of a last woman standing match. And I overall thought it was like an entertaining, captivating match. You know, to me, I feel like Nia has continued to be a really valuable chess piece, you know, for somebody like a Becky Lynch and somebody like a Rhea Ripley, as they head towards their WrestleMania programs. I think she's been utilized really well, and they timed things well enough to save this first win from Becky Lynch over Nia Jax for, you know, 3 weeks before WrestleMania. And I thought they delivered like a satisfying amount of spots for a last woman standing match. And I mean, I've no idea how much it hurt Becky Lynch or Nia Jax afterwards, but there was risk, but it was the level of risk that felt safe and controlled throughout.
Yeah, I mean, it was really built around the last two big spots with the manhandle slam and then the leg drop. And the crowd was, you know, into both of those big spots that they built towards. Like, it was like really like a good main event for what it was. I thought the match of the show was the opener, the tag with DIY and the Creeds. But that was Raw. And then Rhea Ripley comes out at the end just to go face to face with Becky. And that is going to be the remaining focus for the next two episodes of Raw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really great Sami Zayn storytelling on this particular show. I think anything involving Sami was a highlight with Chad Gable and Gunther both being excellent in their roles. I thought Seth and Drew had a very good in-ring segment. Cody delivered a really strong promo as well. The promo work, I thought, and the storytelling overall was very strong on the show.
This was a heavy promo show, but it was all pretty strong stuff for the most part, like right down to Jay and Jimmy. Like, they didn't have a long segment, but I thought it was an effective segment that those two needed for one. And I could certainly see that one gaining some steam. Like, you have a really great video package in there for those two. And I think the buildup in the last like week or so for that one, like I feel that will feel like a pretty significant match come Mania.
Yeah. I just think like top to bottom, like this Raw featured some really strong writing. And I don't think we often hear about writing in professional wrestling getting much praise, but this is like one of those instances where every major program that they were trying to feature and build on the show was good, you know? And that's more than I could say for like SmackDown outside of, you know, the Roman Reigns and Rock segments. I feel like a lot of the things we saw on Friday were pretty uninspired, but every story I felt that got noticeable, like considerable airtime on the show felt very captivating and just well done.
Like, both shows are greatly heightened by your two main events for both nights of Mania and the four players involved, but Raw, it's just so much more spread out about other interesting programs that are going on. And with SmackDown, that was my takeaway on Friday, was after that Rock segment and the rest of it, and I even include like the buildup, like maybe the second biggest thing they've got going on SmackDown is the Logan Paul three-way program. And like, that's not lighting my world on fire. Like, the rest of it, it's just
AJ and Knight is nothing that interesting. Then you have like, then you get all the way down to like, what is it? Karrion Kross and the Prophets, which is,
well even Bayley and EO. Like, I'm not saying that that program is in shambles or anything, but it's not where I feel it should be this close to Mania. And that like, that just is not click to the next level. Maybe it will, but I mean, I think SmackDown has very much been camouflaged by the amount of time dedicated to The Rock and the Bloodline. And that'll be the case this Friday as well, because that will be the major segment. And I mean, at least here on the 3-hour show, you are getting a lot more of these, like you can go several matches deep on the Mania lineup. And I think they have people's interest.
Agreed.
So there you have it, everybody, as Raw winds down. And we will be going to some super chats now, and we have feedback from the forum.
Let's hit the forum.postwrestling.com.
We start off with Manny from Pacoima. A solid edition of Raw, the Creeds versus DIY, or as Cole referred to them once again, DIY, had a bit of a slow start at first, then picked up the pace towards the end. The one shot that followed Sammy to the back and then followed Truth and Miz was a thing of beauty. I am looking forward to Shayna versus Masha Slamovich. Yeah, we didn't mention that, but they did name the opponent for Shayna Baszler at Bloodsport. I also recommend watching Speedball against Marina Shafir from this past Saturday's Revolver show, as well as the Elimination Games match.
Mm-hmm. Can I just maybe say, like, we fielded a question on Ask Away about, like, sports-like presentation. And maybe the notion that WWE might be doing more of it and AEW conversely might be going more into like sports entertainment. There was nothing sports like presentation about that long tracking shot from the in-ring to the backstage talking segment back to the outside. That's all theatrical. That's, you know, sitcom, like whatever, like that's cinema. This is cinema, whatever. Like, and this is all to say, like, I think it's bullshit, you know, like that people say that they want more sports-like presentation. If you want more sports-like presentation, watch boxing, watch the UFC. Pro wrestling fans want a mixture. You want maybe the seriousness of like a sports story, you know, in that like you have two people going for a championship, but we love the flash and the theatrics and maybe like even the corniness sometimes of like some of these backstage skits.
You tell them what.
Let's go to Muggin, who says Raw was a home run. Strong in-ring wrestling. Loose ends getting tied up with the Becky getting that dreaded monkey off her back in that wild last woman standing match. The Jimmy J opener was strong, and I'm glad Jimmy stopped being a chew toy. Cody's rebuttal to The Rock didn't pull any punches. He stepped up significantly. Friday will bring the focus back to where it should be when he and Roman hash this out.
All right. Thank you, Muggin. And last one here is from Ani. For someone who veers towards story over match quality on weekly TV, the best weekly show this year, Cody's range on the microphone is among the chem de la chem of the industry. Top 3 to 4. He's seamlessly able to go from a stern promo 2 weeks ago to an emotional one, urging the fans to go on a journey with him, to an outright scathing one tonight. The start to Gunther Zayn was also awesome with the integration of Gable. The builds to the Usos, Rollins, Drew, and Becky Rhea are also in a really good place. I feel significant disparity between the builds to the programs on Raw and SmackDown. I come out of Raw excited for Mania and then feel ready to give up on wrestling after SmackDown. I wouldn't go that far, but as we've mentioned, I think it's certainly been the stronger show in the lead up to Mania thus far.
I'm glad we're not alone in feeling that way.
No, I think there's like quite a disparity of just like the program. Like they don't have as many programs that are being built there, but that's also, I mean, you still have some key players on SmackDown that have, you know, programs to be determined. Like Bianca Belair would be the biggest one.
That we have 3 weeks to go, though, man. Like, how significant could our program be?
Like, it's going to be something rather thrown together. Like, the most of a hint is, you know, the fact that she told Naomi that she has no sympathy for Bayley, but that's not leading to a match with Bayley. It's, I mean,
could be a tag title challenge against the Kabuki Warriors. We should also mention Asuka suffered an injury.
She was off the house shows this weekend, and yeah, the extent of which is not known. Like, she was there on Friday for SmackDown, but I mean, they are going to be probably pretty cautious this time of the year when it comes to any of that. So
hopefully. Didn't she get injured on SmackDown?
I don't know. Do you have a match on SmackDown?
Well, it was the interaction with the physicality with Bayley. I thought
in the closing segment. Yeah. So
at this point, what do you think the chances are of Jade getting a spot at WrestleMania?
I feel decent. Like, she's been there, but I would think like that's at least a possibility. Like if Bianca is going for the tag titles, like her partner's either going to be Naomi or Jade. You would think, like, those are the only people she's.
So like, Jade, last we saw, she was in Adam Pearce's or like Aldis's office or something. And, you know,
yeah, she hasn't
about
signed yet. Right.
Yeah. Well, that could be her segment, you know, like which brand is she going to go to? Just a contract signing or something. A match feels like that's a really big stage for somebody to have, you know, their first singles match. But that would be a place to do it if you want to make a big deal out of it.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everyone, for the feedback. Again, we're back Tuesday with Rewind Away. So jump on board at postwrestlingcafe.com is where you can go. And you jump onto the cafe. We are going to be doing a lot of cafe stuff while we're down in Philadelphia. So we will be doing our regular shows after Mania for everybody. But all the bonus stuff, that's going to be housed on the cafe. So it's a great time to jump on board, check out what we're doing there. And of course, we have the archive. We have audio news updates at your disposal. Rewind to SmackDown. Collision Course, 51 weeks out of the year out of 52. And lots of other great shows. And if you've got 5 hours of spare time, the NWA podcast dropped on Sunday night. As one Andrew Thompson told me ahead of time, he's like, there's no way we're going past 3.5 hours. I knew better. I knew that they would be going long. And it's always great quality from the four of them. So check out the NWA podcast, The March to Mania, chatting about Mercedes Moné's debut in AEW, the passing of Mike Jones, Virgil, and by about
in the WrestleMania preview.
By hour four, they get to WrestleMania preview. So lots of stuff on a packed edition, as always, on the NWA podcast, and even a letter from Wei Ting in the opening hour.
Yes. Hey, hope to see some of you guys over on Wednesday at the Coca-Cola Arena for AEW Dynamite. If you see us in the hallways, say hi.
Yes. Yes. Come up. Say hello. We will be there. The Coca-Cola Coliseum will be it'll be happening on Wednesday. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, it'll be great. And then afterwards, of course, AEW Dynamite, the after party, wrestling karaoke at Sneaky D's, 431 College Street, hosted by our friends at Poison Rana. $5 entry, so get them before they all sell out at poisonrana.ca.
All right. That's it for us. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. We'll chat with you later this week.